apps can do a lot of cool things. You could order dinner, gamble on your favorite team, and track your health. You could even get a mortgage. One click and you can be approved. I'm not sure by who or what country they're in. You deserve more from the mortgage industry. At AnnieMack Home Mortgage, we believe in the need for live human interaction during a very complex process. The kind of service and guidance which an app simply can't provide. Our customers are more than credit scores and income documents. They're individuals and families who live in and strengthen our communities. Their story is our story, and that story begins in a home. Chris Sawyer is an expert on providing superior customer service and in meeting the mortgage needs of current and future homebuyers. With over 18 years of experience in the industry, Chris is able to help customers migrate through the home buying and home financing process by using his wealth of knowledge as a well-qualified mortgage professional. And best of all, Chris is located in Cromwell, Connecticut, where he has helped hundreds of clients in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island make their dreams of homeownership a reality. Visit chrissawyer.annie-mac.com. Email him at csawyer@annie-mac.com or give him a call, 860-878-8730.
Chris Sawyer, NMLS number 39345, corporate NMLS number 338923, Annie Mac Home Mortgage and Equal Housing Lender, American Neighborhood Mortgage Acceptance Company, LLC, DBA, Annie Mac Home Mortgage, LoFi Direct, Connecticut First Mortgage Correspondent, License Lender, Broker Number, ML338923, Massachusetts Mortgage Lender and Mortgage Broker License Number, MC338923, Rhode Island License Lender, License Number 20112810L. Call for additional details.
Welcome to Sports Talk with R&J. I am Steve Risser, along here with Justin D'Onofrio. We will get to the UConn men and women getting to the Final Four, but we got to start the show reacting to the breaking news. Stephon Diggs traded to the Texans from the Bills. The Bills are going to get the Texans second-round pick. That was Minnesota's pick before the Texans traded out of that pick. But it's a huge move for Houston. Huge move for Houston. They get a number one wide receiver. They got a really good receiving core with Nico Collins, with Tank Dell, and now with Stephon Diggs. This is a huge, huge, huge move for the Texans. Huge move for C.J. Stroud. This team is loading up with a rookie quarterback. And you look at defensively, they got Danielle Hunter they signed. They obviously got Will Anderson on the other side, Derek Stingley. The defense is pretty good. The offense is really good. I think the obvious thing is that the Texans are the best team in the AFC South. I think that's pretty obvious. But the big question is are they Super Bowl contenders? Is this Texans team one of the top teams in the AFC? Are they Super Bowl contenders? And I think absolutely. They got to the divisional round last year. They just added Stephon Diggs. They also went out and got Danielle Hunter as well. We'll see if Tank Dell's healthy late in the season. You got Will Anderson. You have the offensive and defensive rookie of the year at really good positions, defensive edge and quarterback. I think this Houston team is definitely, definitely a contender in the AFC.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm right there with you. I think Texans should be a Super Bowl contender. Yeah, they're the big favorite now, you know, in the AFC South with the rest of the teams at division. So, yeah, you know, they loaded up. They did a really good job in the draft last year. CJ Stroud had an amazing year. Yeah, they got Joe Mixon running back spot. That was an area where they really struggled to run the football last year. Yeah, I know Diggs is getting up there in age, but there was a lot of issues last year with him and the Bills, it kind of felt like. So, going over the Texans now, yeah, like it seems like, you know, the young core that they got, you got your rookie quarterback, you got your QB on a rookie deal right now. So, yeah, it's kind of go time for the Texans to try to get over the hump now and get to their first Super Bowl and hopefully win one. They're right there. I'd have the Chiefs and the Ravens a little bit ahead of them, but I wouldn't be shocked if they knock out one of those two teams in the playoffs.
That leads me to my next question. Are the Texans the favorite in the AFC? And I don't think they're there yet. I still think Kansas City, I still think Baltimore's ahead, but I think Houston's right there. I would not be surprised if I see Houston playing in the AFC championship game for the first time in franchise history with some of the moves they made today. I know Stephon Diggs struggled at the end of the year last year, but as you mentioned, the Diggs Allen stuff was going on after that playoff loss to Cincinnati. It was probably going on all year last year. So yeah, I think with this move, I definitely think that Houston, I think, there's a very, very good there's a good chance you could see Houston playing a Kansas City or a Baltimore in an AFC championship game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the way we kind of saw the Ravens in the AFC championship game, should probably knock them out. I know the Chiefs right now. You know, they got, you know, offensively they got, you know, they have Mahomes, but like yeah, you know, the wide, you know, if they can get like a true number one in there would help. You know, you would think one of these years somebody's gonna finally kind of knock them out, you know, like one of the, you know, at some point maybe the Texans that team. So yeah, it wouldn't be shocking to see the Texans knock off one of those two teams. CJ Stroud, I think, is good enough. D'Amico Ryan's as a coach did a really nice job last year. So I, you know, and with the talent they're adding, you know, they've had, I think, the best offseason so far for, you know, as an NFL team so far, this offseason. They've been like the big winner.
Absolutely. Getting Diggs, getting Hunter, getting those two guys. You got an edge rusher and you got a wide receiver. And you got the offensive and defensive rookie of the year. So yeah, they've definitely been the big winner of the offseason. They've clearly put themselves, I think, ahead of, you know, Jacksonville's got Trevor Lawrence. I think they clearly put themselves ahead of Jacksonville in the AFC South. And they, D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio, they put this team in really, really good position to compete for a Super Bowl. And today they get even closer to that, going out and trading for Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, absolutely. They have, and yeah, they're taking advantage of it right now, and yeah, they're going to be right there next year, and it's going to be a really fun team to watch the next couple of years with Stroud, you know, Diggs, and what they got as well on the defense side of the ball.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Now, going to the Bills side of this, and the big question for the Bills is are they still the favorite to win the AFC East? Are they still the favorite to win the AFC East? Seeing the Jets made some moves. They did go out and make some moves. Jets got Tyron Smith. Jets got Mike Williams. And the Jets got Hassan Reddick. So the Jets went out and improved their team in the offseason, got Morgan Moses too. The Dolphins really didn't improve their team. I know they got Micah Hyde, but they really didn't improve their team. Or they got Hyde or Poyer. I'm not sure which one of the safeties they got. But they really didn't go out and improve their team. But they lost. They did lose Christian Wilkins. But they still got, you know, a playoff caliber team coming back. And they were very close to winning the division last year. The division came down to that last game of the season between the Dolphins and Bills. The big question is are the Bills still the favorite to win the AFC East? And I'm going to say yes, because as long as Josh Allen is there, I know his numbers without Stephon Diggs were not good those first 2 years. But I think with Josh Allen clearly being the best quarterback in that division, I still think they're the favorite. I don't trust Miami, especially the way they collapsed at the end of the year last year. And let's be honest, I'm not trusting a team with Robert Saleh as their head coach to win the division. So I'm going to say yes. I still think the Bills are the favorite to win the AFC East.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Bills still have Josh Allen. That's kind of all I need. Yeah, with the Dolphins, they fell apart at the end of last year. And the Jets, yeah, you know, they have Rodgers, but he's going to be 40 at the start of the year. Yeah, Tyron Smith's a nice move on the old line, but the guy's never healthy. So I don't trust the Jets offensive line that much still. So, yeah, I'm still there with the Bills. Yeah, they lost a lot of pieces, and, you know, but again, they still got the draft coming up. They could still maybe get a trade with somebody, you know, maybe they could get a T Higgins, you know, maybe they try to go get T Higgins, you know, maybe that's their next move here. But yeah, I still have the Bills right now being the best team in the division. I just don't trust Miami. I don't trust the Jets. And yeah, Josh Allen's still a really talented quarterback. And I think that's still enough. You just put a little bit around him. The Bills could still win that division.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're going to draft a wide receiver. You know they're going to draft a receiver at 28. So, yeah, it might not be as good as having Stephon Diggs last year, but it still wouldn't be bad for them. It still be bad for them. You know they're going to draft a receiver at 28. And also, the Diggs-Allen thing, I think, was kind of affecting that team. Now they're going to be a run-first team, you know, throw the ball to Dalton Kincaid, and they still have one of the top quarterbacks in the league. So I still think this team is definitely the favorite. Not definitely. I think it's close between them and Miami, but I still think they are the favorite to win the AFC East. But the next question with the Bills, though, is we've seen them, you know, knock on the door in the AFC. We've seen them knocking on the door the last 4 years, you know, but coming up short three times to the Kansas City Chiefs. The big question is are the Bills still contenders to win the AFC? I'm not going to say they're definitely not the favorite, but I still think they're in the mix because of the quarterback they have. And their defense is decent. They got a good running game. Dalton Kincaid had a good year at tight end. So I'm still going to say, even without Stephon Diggs, I'm going to say the Bills are still contenders. Now, they're not the favorite. I mean, you could argue they may not even be a top four team in the AFC going into the season if Joe Burrow is healthy. But I'm still going to say they are contenders in the AFC.
I'm going to say no because Josh Allen hasn't gotten it done yet in the playoffs for me. Last year was his shot. You had the Chiefs at home, and you could not get it done. And to me, I feel like – and I know we mentioned the Diggs and Allen stuff may have not been great last year, but you finally had an opportunity to play KC at home. You couldn't get over that hump last year. So for me, now you lose Diggs. We'll see what else kind of happens and, you know, with the Bills. But I just – when it's gone in the playoffs, I just don't trust the Bills right now. They just haven't got over that hump the last couple of years. And at the team construction right now, I don't see them getting over a team in the playoffs like the Chiefs or even like the Texans right now or the Ravens. So, you know, yeah, maybe they're like the fourth best team. They're right there with the Bengals. But I haven't seen them get done in the playoffs with this core yet. So I have a hard time believing that they're going to do it now.
I just can't count out Josh Allen. I can't count out Josh Allen. He's been one of the top quarterbacks in the league the last 4 years. Yes, this is definitely a loss, but I do think they think he can recover from this. We all thought, you know, 2 years ago, we thought Tyreek Hill was a loss to the Chiefs. Look at what happened. They won two Super Bowls. I know. All right, listen. I know Josh Allen is not Patrick Mahomes, but he's still one of the top quarterbacks in the league. So as long as he's the quarterback of that team, I think as long as he's the quarterback, their Super Bowl window was open. I don't think their Super Bowl window was closed. I think as long as Josh Allen is there, I mean, he had over 40. I know he had a bunch of turnover. He had 18 interceptions last year, but he had 40 total touchdowns last year. So I'd say as long as Josh Allen is there, I'm going to say their Super Bowl window was open, and I'm going to say they're contenders.
Yeah, with Allen, it's still very possible, and I would not be shocked. I just right now, I haven't seen Allen get done in the playoffs. In, like, the big moments against the Chiefs. Like, it's been the Chiefs for them that they have not been able to get that hump. They lost the Bengals a couple years ago as well. And until they do that, I have a hard time trusting them. But now you just lose Diggs. Yes, maybe that's an addition by subtraction for in a locker room sense. You know, maybe they can, you know, they'll definitely probably, yeah. It's, you know, you said they'll probably draft a wide receiver. Maybe that comes in and helps things. But, yeah, you know, I know he throws a lot of turnovers. And, you know, but he's still a really talented quarterback. There's just something with the Bills in the playoffs. I just don't trust, and I'm tired of trying to buy into them and thinking that they have a chance to get the Super Bowl because I haven't seen it. And I feel like the last couple of years were their opportunities, and they haven't capitalized on it. Last year, they could have capitalized with Kansas City at home. They didn't. I just, you know, with all the pieces they lost to on defense this offseason, I just have a hard time now saying, yeah, I could still – with the team construction at the moment, I can't see them being the Chiefs or the Ravens.
They've been able to beat the Chiefs. I've seen them beat the Ravens. They have been able to beat the Chiefs in the regular season. Now, not in the postseason. They did beat the Ravens in the postseason, but I've been able to see them beat the Chiefs in the regular season with Josh Allen. I'm not counting them. I know they're not the favorite, but they're a team in the mix. I can't say, oh, they're done. They're not going to do anything next year. They're still in the mix. I know that McDermott and Allen haven't got it done in the playoffs, but they've been close to getting it done, okay? I mean, they've been a lot closer than their, you know, the three other teams in their division. I mean, in 2020, they get to the AFC Championship game. In 2021, Josh Allen did everything he could have done. But they end up losing that. They end up losing that shootout to Mahomes. I know it was a disappointing performance against the Bengals last year, 2 years ago, and last year was disappointing. But they lost by 3 points to the Chiefs. And is a receiver really worth like that? I mean, I know the receiver is important, very important, but I still think with the quarterback there, I have to still say they're contenders.
Yeah, I could see Josh Allen getting there at one point. I wouldn't, you know, I think he will at some point. Right now with the team construction, I just don't. I know they had a lot of injuries too on defense last year, but now you lose Von Miller. You mentioned that they lost Porter. They lost both, you know, they've lost so many guys on the defense. They lost Tre'Davious White. Like there's just so many holes too in that defense they got to fill. And there's so many good quarterbacks in this conference that I wouldn't be shocked if Josh Allen could win a shootout against any of them. I just think it's a lot tougher with their defense now where they got to really, they're going to have to kind of fix that defense and fill some of those holes now. And look, Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs is, I know they'd be in the regular season, but Mahomes in the playoffs is a different animal. And he hasn't been able to capitalize on that yet. And yeah, you know, Mahomes. So until that day, I just have a hard time seeing it. I won't be shocked if, because Allen's good enough to do it. I just, throughout my life, I haven't seen the Bills haven't been great, or the Bills have been good, but they never get over the hump. So I just have a hard time buying into them.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening. But we got to move to the Final Four. We got to move to UConn, and they will face Alabama on Saturday night. And we'll get right into this one and the keys for UConn to win this game. And my three keys for UConn, we've seen how dominant they've been. UConn has been so dominant to get to this point, that 30-0 run, just absolutely amazing. But we'll get to their dominance kind of later. Let's focus first on their game against Alabama. And really, there are three keys to winning this game. And I think the first key is Killingen has to continue to dominate inside. Three of the four games of the tournament he has. And the one Achilles heel, this is nitpicking, but the one Achilles heel of this UConn team is three-point shooting. And say Klingon doesn't have a great game and they struggle from three-point range, because we saw it in the first half against Illinois. Say Klingon doesn't have a great game and they struggle from three-point range, that is a way they can get beat. So I think the number one key is for Klingon to continue to dominate. I think that's the number one key for this team. Number two for me, need to contain Bama's three-point shooting. In three of Bama's four tournament wins, they've scored over 80 points, hit over 10 threes, and they scored 80 points, hit over 10 threes, and shot over 40% from three-point range. They need to keep shooting the ball really, really well. UConn needs to contain their three-point shooting. UConn needs to contain Bama's three-point shooting. And if they do that, I think there's a great chance of them winning the game, because I think really that's Bama's only chance to pull this upset is for them to shoot to be lights out from three-point range. If Bama's lights out from three-point range, I think the only way Bama can upset UConn is if they're lights out from three-point range. And then number three, Newton's got to have a big game. He had a little bit of an off game in the Elite Eight. If Newton has another really, really big game, I don't see any way where UConn could lose. But the funny thing is, for how dominant UConn is, UConn might not even be able to do – even if UConn doesn't do two of these three things, they could still win. That just shows you how dominant UConn has been.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. It's been amazing. And I know we're talking about their dominance, but it is insane. My first one is cut the head off the snake. That's Mark Sears for the Alabama offense. Stephon Castle, I assume, is going to be, on him on Saturday evening. And, again, Terrence Shannon Jr. had 41 straight double-digit performances. I think he went 2 points against Stephon Castle. And then Boo Booey, the senior Northwestern, he shut him down as well. So Mark Sears is kind of the engine that kind of goes for that offense. They got some other guys around him that could shoot. But if you can kind of get Mark Sears to, quiet, he had a really good second half there. It's North Carolina in their comeback win. So in the Sweet 16. So if you can kind of slow him down, keep him contained like they've done with Shannon and Boo Booey the last couple games, they'll be okay. My second one is get clinging the ball on the block, because Grant Nelson, the North Dakota State transfer, he played really well against North Carolina, but he's really struggling the defensive end this year, especially against better teams. Klingon should dominate him inside. And then their other guy, Nick Pringles, 6'10", he could guard him as well. He's a little bit better as a defender, but he's only 6'10 as well. So, and if they try to double Klingon, he's a pretty good passer, and hopefully those three start falling. As you mentioned, the balls, I think, are a little bit overinflated. Like Alex Carabin did a podcast, and and he's kind of saying too, like, you could kind of see some of the ball handling, some of the guards that just lose it to, there's been a lot of long rebounds. So hopefully during the Final Four, they are a little, they'll take some air out of the basketball, hopefully. And then my third one is kind of just continue second chance opportunities, just own the glass like they have been all year. Because Alabama wants to get out and run, and if you could kind of hit shots or hit your second chance opportunities, it's harder to run after you make a basket. So you kind of can kind of own the glass too, especially offensively. Would it be a huge key for them to knock off the Tide?
Yeah, this is a game that UConn should obviously win. I mean, it's a game, if they play their game, they should definitely win this game. But we will get to Bama's side of this, and I think the biggest key for Bama is, and you said it, you said how UConn's got to contain UConn's got to contain Marcus Sears. Bama needs Sears to have a huge game. Bama needs Sears to have the game of his life. He's their best player. He averaged over 20 points a game. If they want to somehow pull this huge upset over UConn, Bama needs Marcus Sears to have a huge, huge game against UConn. That's the number one key. Number two, they got to contain Donovan Clingan inside. If they can contain Donovan Clingan, that would give them more. Give them a chance, because we said it earlier. The one Achilles heel of UConn, the Achilles heel of UConn this year, is their 3-point shooting is a little bit inconsistent. If you look at all the losses they had against Seton Hall, against Creighton, especially the Seton Hall and Creighton games, they didn't shoot the ball well from 3-point range. So the one Achilles heel of this UConn team, if there is one, and this is nitpicking, like I said earlier, is 3-point shooting. So they have to I would say containing Clingan is big, because if they can contain him and UConn has a bad day shooting threes, they will have a chance. They should have a chance in the end. And then lastly, they got to hit their threes like they have all tournament long. Like I said earlier, they've shot over 40% from three in three of their four wins, and they've hit over 10 threes in all those games. So they got to continue to shoot the ball well from 3-point range if they want any chance to win the game. So it's containing Clingan, Sears got to have a big game, and Bama's got to hit their threes if they want any chance to pull this upset. And I feel like all three of those things have to happen. Justin, your keys for Bama.
Yeah, my first one was your last one. You know, I think Alabama's got to hit 15 to 23 to win this game. And that's going to be hard to do. You're playing a football stadium. They got the depth perception. You know, sometimes in these final four games, it's always a little bit low scoring just because of that. Guys kind of struggle to knock down shots early on. So, you know, it can happen. Alabama, they are that good of a shooting team that they could knock down 50s and 20. They could shoot 50% from three, and they could knock off UConn. It's very possible. My second one is Grant Nelson. I kind of talked about with him on the other side, but now offensively, because he can be, or he's more of a stretch four. And if he can knock down his threes and pull Clingan away from the basket, would be huge. He takes a lot of them, but he is a little, I think he's like 29% on the year, Nelson. So he's not great. So I assume, you know, Hurley's going to keep Clingan away from him and just have him chuck. And then if he knocks down three or four, then it's going to open some things up for Alabama to get to the rim, because Nate Oates is very analytical. They either take a three or they take a layup or they take a free throw. They don't take any mid-range jumpers. That's all they do. So, you know, Alabama's going to want to get to the rack. Because to me, Alabama is like Illinois. They're a carbon copy of Illinois. And I think Illinois is a little bit better than Alabama. So, you know, you kind of saw Illinois try to get the basket because their threes weren't falling, and you saw how that works. So if Nelson can knock down threes, that you can be in trouble. If not, UConn's in great shape. And then number three, defensively, Alabama's played a little bit better offensively. I know some are saying, oh, you know, Alabama's defense really changed. It really hasn't. Like, they're still ranked over 100 in Bartolovic and defensive efficiency during the tournament. It's still not great. You know, like, and you're telling me a team that they play 7-second offense. You're really telling me they're going to guard UConn for 30 seconds. It's not happening. It's just not. So I have a hard time buying in if to their defense. I think they're like, Alabama's going to have to play really solid defense this one. I just don't see it, but defensively they just got to guard well enough for 30 seconds. And if they do that, they're going to be in great shape. But that's a huge one for them. It's a defensive end of the floor, because they want it. Because if Alabama can make this a track meet, Kentucky put up 117 on them in 40 minutes. Auburn put up 99 on them. Like, UConn's good enough to outscore Bama in their own game. So for Alabama, they're going to have to make stops in this one.
Definitely. They're definitely going to have to make stops. They're definitely going to have to play defense. But the one thing about Alabama is I think they can keep up with UConn, you know, offensively. But you said it earlier, the teams don't shoot as well at the Final Four because it's played in a football stadium. This is going to be played in a football stadium. So teams don't shoot as well. So I think that's definitely a big advantage for UConn in this game, is the fact that Bama might not shoot as well, because that's been their bread and butter, hitting three-point shots for Bama. And we know their best player is a really good three-point shooter, Marcus Sears. So they're able to make 3-point shots, but I think this is a game that, you know, maybe it's close, just like the Illinois game in the first half. I don't think it will be. UConn won't pull away like they did against Illinois, but I think UConn is in control of this game by the middle of the second half. I think they're in control of this game by the middle of the second half, and I think they went up by double digits. I like this matchup for UConn. I think Bama doesn't shoot the ball well from 3-point range. I think Sears has a decent game, but not a great game. I think Klingon continues to be a beast. I think you get a big game from Tristan Newton. I think Cam Spencer has a big game as well. And I think UConn goes to the national title. I think UConn goes to the national championship game for the second year in a row. I think UConn goes to the national championship game for the second year in a row. But, Justin, can Bama pull off a massive upset and get to this and get to their first national title game in program history?
No, I'm with you. I get UConn. I get UConn as well. Yeah, I think this thing's close at half. And so far in the tournament, when the game's been close at half, that's scary for the opponent, because whatever Dan Harrell was saying at halftime has really, really helped. So I have UConn win this game by double digits. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. Alabama hangs around. They hit some shots early. But I think UConn ends up pulling away. I just think they have a little bit more talent. I think Klingon defensively, you saw the impact that he had on defense on the floor the other day against Illinois, you know, and I think Castle yet again just shows he's one of the best defenders in the whole sport. He might be only behind Jamal Sett at Houston and Devin Carter, Providence's top three defender, you know, perimeter guys in the sport right now. And I think he does. I think he shuts them down again. And I think UConn does win by double digits yet again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they win another tournament game by double digits. But before we get to, you know, how dominant this UConn team is, we're gonna get to the second game. It's the first game. We want to talk about UConn first on the show. But this is the first game of the doubleheader on Saturday. That is between NC State and Purdue. Who we think is going to win. We'll get into our keys of the game. We're going to start with Purdue, and the first key is pretty obvious. Get the ball into Zach Edey, 40 points, just an absolutely dominant performance in the Elite Eight against Tennessee. Get the ball into Zach Edey. That is the most obvious one thing, but you just get Zach Edey involved early and often. I think that is a huge key for Purdue. Number two, contain DJ Burns, because DJ Burns has been the guy, the old school power forward right there. The old school power forward, we don't see that much at all in these days, but DJ Burns has been the guy for NC State in this run. He's had double digits in every game but one in the tournament. So get the ball inside of DJ to contain DJ Burns. That is the biggest thing. That's another big thing for Purdue as well. And shoot the three ball. They didn't shoot the three that well against the Tennessee. So they really need to shoot the three ball better against. They can't rely on Edey getting 40 points again. I know Edey's great, but they can't rely on him getting 40 points. They got it. The guys like Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer got to shoot the three better for Purdue to get to the Monday night final.
Yeah, I like your three kings. Yeah, Purdue looked tight. Their guards did on Sunday. I think maybe that's a reason why they shot so poorly. But yeah, they got to shoot the ball better Saturday night against NC State. My first one is for Purdue. You don't have to double DJ Burns inside, because with Edey at 7'4", Burns is only 6'9". So Burns is going to have a lot tougher time, I feel like, getting shots over Zach Edey. And again, if I would assume, is going to play him one-on-one, that means you're not going to leave any of those NC State shooters open, like a DJ Horn, who's been knocking down a ton of perimeter threes, which, you know, would be huge. That's kind of been a huge key of why NC State's in the position that they're in right now. My second one is, you know, if NC State does go out and double, you know, Zach Edey, you know, those shooters around him, as you mentioned, they got to be able to knock down three pointers. You know, Lawyer, you know, Braden Smith, you know, Trey Coffin Wren, who's been a decent shooter this year as well. So, you know, even like a Lance Jones, who's made a great addition for him as a wing guy for the Boilermakers, like if they knock down their threes, Purdue's going to be very tough to beat, you know, in this one. And then my last one for Purdue is get up early, you know, because we always see it with these underdog seeds, you know, the longer they hang around, the longer that they believe they can win the basketball game. And look, you know, Purdue, now the pressure is sort of off that they got to the Final Four, but now you're in another situation though, where you should be an 11 seed in the spot. And Purdue still has lost a three straight double-digit seeds in the tournament the last 3 years. So I still not a huge Matt Painter believer. You know, I used to feel bad for him. It's kind of hard because he always complained about the officials now, and you know, which is very annoying. But look, I you know, the longer you let this NC State team hang around, the way that things have been going with 9 straight wins for him, you know, they're not going to go away. So they got to jump on them early on Saturday.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. The longer you keep this NC State in the game, the better chance they are going to pull that upset. And you know, there's those 1983 vibes coming in. You know, you've heard about those 1983, all these comparisons to 1983. But for Purdue, very crucial to you take control of this game early, because the longer you keep NC State around, the better chance they're definitely going to have to win this game. So now the big keys for NC State to win this game, obviously it's containing Zach Edey. Containing Zach Edey, you know, not letting him do what he did against Tennessee. Containing Zach Edey, you know, have him score 25, not 40. And force other guys from Purdue, force Lawyer, force Braden Smith to beat you for Purdue. So containing Zach Edey is huge for NC State. Number two, DJ Burns got to continue to play as well as he is. TJ Burns got to continue to be that guy for them. He's got to have a huge, huge game against Purdue. He's been playing since the ACC. So he's playing great since the ACC tournament. He's been playing well since in the NCAA tournament. He's got to continue to play as well as he is for Purdue to win this game. And lastly, DJ Horn's got to continue to play well too. He's their number two. He's their guard. He's been playing really well for them too. He's got to continue to play well for them to pull the upset. Justin, what does NC State have to do to recreate what happened in 1983?
Yeah, for them to get back to that spot, Burns, he's got to stay on the floor. He's got to stay out of foul trouble. I know it's very tough playing Zach Edey. I know. You know, it's tough to defend him. I get why he gets so many calls at points. Now, you know, Edey gets away with ripping guys down, and it's a foul on the opponent. But, you know, like, that's tough to – you know, like, Burns can't get in a situation like that, because if he's not on the floor, NC State's in a lot of trouble on Saturday night. So he's got to be on the floor. My second one is they got to hit the glass. You cannot give Purdue a ton of second opportunities off of offensive rebounds. And – you know, you just can't give them 5-6 opportunities on an offensive possession. So, you know, they got to hit the glass. They can't, you know, because Burns is the only guy that only averages 4 rebounds a game. So they need a couple of the other guys to help out around them, you know, to grab rebounds of this one, to kind of just, you know, keep BD. I know it's tough because he's 7'4", but they can kind of somewhat contain him, or just, you know, keep a couple of possessions to only one or two offensive rebounds, or even zero would be great. Then my third one is they're going to need some luck from the three-point defense again. Through the first 4 games of the tournament, opponents are only shooting 23% for three. I think some of that's luck, because you saw Marquette had a ton of wide open threes. You know, I think that's because some of the balls were overinflated this past weekend. Now some of that is good defense, but some of that's just luck. You're gonna probably need some of that luck again on Saturday night. You know, I know Purdue's 3-for-18. If you can get Purdue to shoot like that again on Saturday, you could be in pretty good shape. But you know, if Purdue knocks, because Purdue's second in the country, I think, shooting like 40% from three. So if Purdue does get back on track from the 3-point range, NC State's in a lot of trouble. So they're gonna need some luck yet again to pull off the upset and get back to the national championship game since 83, first time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, they're definitely going to need the ball to bounce their way, but I'm not ruling them out. I'm not ruling out the fact that they could pull this upset. I mean, they definitely have a chance, but ultimately I do think that Purdue wins this game. I had Purdue and UConn in the final, and I think ultimately Purdue wins this game. And I think it's close for most of the game. I think it's close. But I think Purdue's always in control of this game. I think they're always up by, like, you know, 5 to 7 points for most of the game. I think they eventually pull away and win it by double digits. And I got Purdue getting to the championship game facing UConn. You'll have the best player against the best team in the national championship game. Justin, can NC State, though, recreate what they did in 1983 and get to the national title game?
They got a great chance, or not a great, they got a good chance to win this game. I just think with Edey, it's going to be too tough. You know, Purdue's done an awesome job getting the free throw line. I think, you know, they're going to get their 20, 25 free throws in this game, and I think that's going to be enough. I I think Tua Burns. I just think it's going to be too tough for him to score over Zach Edey in this one. And I think they contain him. And I think Purdue has just too much talent. I think this is where the Cinderella – well, no, NC State's not really a Cinderella because they do play in the ACC. But it's been a great story. I wouldn't be shocked if they hang in there, even knock them off. But I do think Purdue does win this game by like 8 or 9 points. I think NC State keeps it close for as long as possible. But, you know, Purdue, the free throw shooting, I think pull away in this game.
Yes, I think they definitely do. And now this sets up a UConn-Purdue national championship game. We got the best player against the best team. We both have that national title game. And there's no surprise. I'm going with you. I'm pretty sure you're going to go with, but I'm definitely going with UConn. I'm going with UConn to repeat. This team is just too dominant. It's been the best team in the, for me, it's been the best team in the country all season long. And I think it's a very close game against Purdue, but I think they pull it out against Purdue and they win their 6th national title on Monday night.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they get number 6. The only thing that worries me about that game is if Zach Edey goes to the line 25 times, like, and they get clean and foul trouble early, and then you got to bring a Samson Johnson, who I don't think physicality can match up with Edey. So that's my only worry. That's my only concern. I think UConn's a better team. I think UConn should beat them, but if it turns into a free throw shooting contest, Purdue are going to get the calls. So, because I think Castle, he's probably on Braden Smith. I think, you know, they shut down. I don't think Braden Smith's doing anything over Stephon Castle. So I think UConn is a better team. I think they should win the game, but that's my one concern. If Edey gets some calls and he goes to the line 15, 20 times, but I was thinking about, I don't think he's going up against a guy like Donovan Klingon, who's 7'2". Like, I don't think he has. So that'll be interesting. And I think if the officials let those two play, I think those two can kind of just cancel each other out too. And I think UConn guards are better than Purdue's guards as well.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a really close game. And I think UConn pulls it out and wins their 6th national title. Now, the big question about UConn though is, you know, if they win their 6th national title, where do you compare them with the Duke teams of the early 90s and with the Florida teams from 06 and 07? I would say they're definitely would not be as good as those Duke teams. Those Duke teams are, I think, untouchable. And it was different. College basketball was different in those days. But say they win this, I think they're close to what Florida was. I'd still take those Florida teams from 06 and 07 because, again, college basketball was a little bit different, you know, in those days as well. And now it's closer to what it is now, but it was a little bit different in those days too. So I'd probably still take don't think they're as good as the Florida team or those Duke teams in the 90s, but it's still pretty impressive. I think you put them right below those two teams.
Yeah, so I was on kind of Kenbaum, kind of seeing what teams he had efficiently wise better than this UConn team. There's only 3 since the turn of the century. Gonzaga in 2021, Kentucky in 2015, and then Duke in 99 were the 3 teams that, you know, he has ranked better than
those UConn. Neither of those 3 teams though won the national championship.
Yeah, that is the scary thing. They have not, but 15 Calipari should have won it. You know, 99 Duke was a 9-point favorite against UConn in that game. Like, yeah, Duke was the overwhelming favorite in that one, and UConn was 38-2 going that game, or 37-2. But UConn's right there, with one of the all-time best, because their average winning margin by victory margin in the tournament's like been by 27 points. That hasn't happened since the UCLA teams of John Wooden, which you only had to, you had to play less games. I think you only had to play 4 games back then. Like, this is something that's totally unheard of. So, yeah, those Duke teams, the one that knocked off UNLV there, that those Duke teams are really good. I'd stack this team up against anybody, because Dan Hurley's different too as a coach, and I think that has a part of it. Like, he's never satisfied. I kind of mentioned it last week. He's like Saban, where nothing's ever perfect. So they say Alabama can win a 42-0 game, and Nick Saban's still going to nitpick everything that he can find. It's the same thing with Dan Hurley. So I put those teams up against anybody. But yeah, you know, those Duke teams would be very tough to beat. I think they could beat those Florida teams, 06, 07. Yeah, it's a different sport, or a little bit different sport, but the UConn dominance, like, this is nothing we've ever seen. And again, we're never going to see a 30-0 run in an NCAA tournament game, let alone an Elite Eight game against a 1-3 seed. So that had been one of the hottest teams in the tournament and one of the hottest ways to tear Sanders Jr. in the country. And they shut him down totally. So it's unheard of.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the 30-0 run, the way they shut down Shannon, just unbelievable. The dominance the last 2 years, they haven't had a game that's been, you know, that they've won by less than double digits. So the dominance has been amazing. But I just think, you know, I'm just saying, I think the Florida teams in 06 and 07 placed a little bit better competition. And those Duke teams are legendary with legendary players, with Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, and Bobby Hurley. It, to me, it's they're close to those two teams. And it's not totally fair to say, because college basketball is so different. Some of the best players don't play; they play in Europe now. You still have the one and done. You still have the one and done, which Duke didn't have in the '90s. They really didn't have in the '90s with the Duke teams. You still have the one and done, so it's tough to compare. I would just put them a little bit under the Duke teams in the '91-'92, and the Florida teams in 06 and 07. But this is not the only UConn team that made the Final Four. The UConn women made the Final Four, and they got a big game against Iowa on Friday night. But the big question is going into this game is, these are the two best players in women's college basketball, Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark. But here's the question. Who are you taking between the two, Caitlin Clark or Paige Beckers? And let me tell you something. Paige Beckers is an outstanding player. She's a phenomenal player. The way she came off the injury this year, absolutely phenomenal. But let's be honest. Caitlin Clark is something we've never seen in women's basketball before. The game on Monday night got a 12-3, the highest rated college basketball game on ESPN of all time, the highest rated women's game of all time. Caitlin Clark is averaging 32-9. Iowa, I think, had been to one Final Four in their program's history before Caitlin Clark. This player is phenomenal. If Iowa wins the national championship, she is the GOAT. Nothing against Paige at all. She's an outstanding player. But come on, I think you have to take, if you have the choice between the two, you got to take Caitlin Clark.
I'm taking Paige because I think all around she's a better player. I think all around means she's better.
All right. 32-9 against 22 and averages 22-3. Caitlin Clark averages 32-9. She averages 32-9.
Then Clark's a phenomenal player. She's so fun to watch. She's the woman's version of Steph Curry. You know, that's what she is. You know, she's such a flashy player. Some of the passes she makes are unbelievable. I think Paige is a little bit better efficiency-wise. She's not as turnover prone because Clark averaged like 5 turnovers a game. And I think Paige is a better defender than Clark is. So all around, I'm taking Paige over Clark. Now, again, and that's something to take away for Caitlin Clark. They're both unbelievable basketball players. Clark is so fun to watch. She's been great for the women's game. I just think all around-wise, I think Paige is a little bit better than her than Caitlin Clark. That's nothing to knock on Caitlin Clark. I just think it's a little bit better all-around game than Clark.
I know what Gino said. You know, we got the best player in the country, but come on now. I mean, she's playing with 2 first-round picks. I know they lost to Ozzie Fudd.
Paige is playing 8 girls. They're 7.
I know down to 7 girls, but she's playing with 2 first-round picks with Aaliyah Edwards and Nika Mule. Tell me another Iowa player that's going to be drafted, okay? If you take Caitlin Clark off this Iowa team, they probably barely make the tournament, okay? Last year with Paige Beckers, UConn made the Sweet 16. Paige is in one of the greatest programs, not only in women's college basketball history, but in sport, in the history of sports, she's in one of the greatest. UConn women's basketball is one of the greatest programs of all time. Did you ever hear about Iowa women's basketball before Caitlin Clark? No. And all they've really been decent, but they're not even close to the level of UConn historically. Okay? Lisa Bluter is not even close to Gina Wariama. Gina Wariama is one of the greatest coaches ever. So I'm sorry. I'm definitely taking Caitlin. I'm sorry. I'm definitely taking. I know it's. All right, it is. I'll give a lot of UConn fans this. It's close, but I still think you got to take Caitlin Clark if you have the choice between the two, just because of the way she's impacted the game. Just because of the way she's impacted women's college basketball. It's unbelievable. Look at the ratings on Monday night; they were phenomenal.
I know they're unbelievable. They really are. Again, she. She's a premium television right now for the women's game, which is great for it. You know, the parity, the talent that is in the women's game right now is unbelievable. You know, the revenge game Monday night was for, you know, I think she has a little talent quick. Like Kate Martin's pretty good. Like she had a decent game. I don't know if I don't mean mock drafts, you know, so like, I don't know if she's going to get drafted, but like, she's not bad. The Hannah Stolke's not bad either. I think she averaged like 13-7. Like she has some talent. Like, you know, yes, Paige does have Aaliyah Edwards and Nika Mills. She did lose Aaliyah Edwards in that conference championship game. They had nobody. They had six, and then she went off against Georgetown in that one. But yeah, like she's great, and you know, like if I need to sell a ticket, like if I get some certain order age, I need to sell tickets. Yeah, maybe I'm thinking Clark because I'm gonna fill the seats. But like, I like Paige because he's a little bit better overall, or just because I'll take her defense. She doesn't make some of the passes like Kate and Clark does, but you know, Paige will cut down the turnovers. You know, Paige only averages, I think, less than two a game. So, look, Clark's a phenomenal. I love watching her. You know, it's gonna be tough. You know, like I'm obviously gonna root against her Friday night, but you know, like they win, I'm gonna be cheering for them to beat South Carolina. So, you know, she's awesome to watch. She's been awesome for the sport to watch, and she's gonna be great on the Indiana Fever when she gets drafted in 2 weeks. But I think overall talent, you know, overall all around player, I got to take Paige, though.
Yeah, it's close. It's close. I would just take Caitlin, but it should be a great game. And before we discuss the game a little bit, we'll talk about who's under more pressure to win this title, Paige or Clark. And I think it's Paige because Clark is accomplished. Even though she doesn't want a title, I think she's accomplished enough. I think Paige has got to win it because she doesn't want to be like this one great UConn women's basketball player doesn't win a championship. If Paige wants to be in the conversation with the Maya Moores, with the Breonna Stewarts, with the Diana Taurasis, with the Sue Birds, she's got to win this title.
I think it's Clark because I think with Paige, you know, I'll get to why I don't think it's Paige, but I think Clark just because she's been, she's got all the scoring records. She's got all the records right now in the tournament, but I feel like they're the one seed. I think right now with, you know, everybody that's hurt for UConn, I they're the favorite in the game. Like, I think it's a game, they could win, or they could always win the national championship as a one seed. I just think right now I just have a hard time that there's a lot of pressure on Paige because of all the injuries. And nobody picked UConn to even be here this year, like, because of all the injuries. Everyone thought they'd lose to Ohio State again in the Sweet 16. Like, nobody thought they'd be back here. Like, for the first time I can remember, Gino going to Final Four playing with house money. Like, that doesn't happen. I think this is best coaching job, too, because they have no depth. There's no depth on this team. So I just feel like if UConn loses a tough, close one, it's like, well, you know, UConn had no depth. UConn got no, you know, UConn just half the team's hurt, you know? So I think there's a little bit more on Clark, even though that's like the only thing she hasn't accomplished. Again, she's going to go down as one of the best, you know, if not the best women's college basketball player of all time. You know, she's going to be getting close right there. But I think everybody's kind of like, they could really win this thing. Everybody wants to see them knock off South Carolina, you know, the undefeated Gamecocks. So I think there's a little bit more on Caitlin Clark than Paige.
I could see your point. I definitely see your point with Paige because they're really pulling playing with seven players. Gino's playing with house money and he's done a phenomenal job. And I get your point there. I just think Clark has done enough for the game of women's basketball. And the reason why I think Paige is under more pressure to win that title is because she's not even considered on that Mount Rushmore of great UConn players. If she can't bring home a title, she's not on that Mount Rushmore. She's not going to be on that Mount Rushmore of great UConn players if she can't win a title. So I get your point, but I would just go with Clark there. But we got to get to the game between UConn and Iowa. And you brought it up, UConn with only seven players. I guess it's going to be a difficult game for them to win. I think Caitlin Clark has another huge, huge game. I think it's close and it comes down to the end. But I'm going to take the best player in college basketball to get to the final. I know I picked the UConn men to win it, to win it all. But the UConn women have had a great season, great run to get here. But I think it ends on Friday night. I got Iowa playing South Carolina in the national championship game, a rematch of the semi last year. I got Iowa playing South Carolina in the national title game.
Yeah. I have to take, yeah, I'm going to take Iowa in a close one. I just think I want to take UConn. I'll be cheering for him, but I just don't think there's enough there right now with UConn. Again, you know, they got to stay out of foul trouble. If you could kind of just keep Clark in check, like if you can keep her to like 20 points and make some of the other ones beat you, like Kate Martin, a Gabby Marshall, if she can knock down some shots, then you have, you know, UConn's got a chance to win. Cause I don't, Geno's have a much better game plan than Kim Mulkey did the other night. Like going under all those screens was, I don't know how it took him 36 minutes to stop doing that, but I like UConn's not doing that. So I don't think Caitlin Clark's putting up 40 against UConn. They can keep her to 20-25. I think the Huskies have a chance. I just think that's a very tall task. And, you know, Leah Edwards really has to play well. You know, Nika Mule, she can knock down a couple shots, but I think Iowa pulls out a close one. I just think UConn, you know, how much is left in the tank for him? And, you know, I need to be tough. And I was going to get up and down. I think you kind of see it in the fourth quarter last couple games. There's, you know, they've kind of have held on because there's not much left in that gas tank. And I can't blame him for that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they've been a great run to get here. But I just think Iowa right now has the best player in the country. And I think they pull out a close one against UConn. But for the national title, Iowa and South Carolina, I got to go South Carolina. I think they complete the undefeated season. I like that. And for me, it's the coaching mismatch between Dawn Staley and Lisa Bluter. I think South Carolina has the depth. And I think Dawn Staley wins her third national title on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd love to see, you know, UConn or Iowa get there. I don't, you know, NC State, I wouldn't mind as long as the NC State men don't get there. We don't need another dual champion, you know. UConn, like to keep UConn as the only dual champions out there on both basketball, the men and the women. But yeah, I think South Carolina, the one thing I would beat them last year was with that zone, and it's South Carolina really started to shoot the three. And Dawn Staley brought in some 3-point shooters to make sure that doesn't happen again. So South Carolina has kept some teams around the last in the Sweet 16 Elite Eight, but I think, you know, they get over that, but I don't think they mess around with an Iowa. I don't think they mess around Friday with an NC State. So I do think Dawn Staley gets another ring and they finish a perfect season off.
Yeah, I think they do. I think South Carolina this year, because last year, remember, they were perfect until that. They were undefeated until that Iowa game and they lost. But I do think it'll be different this year for Dawn Staley and South Carolina. But Philly's big man made his return last night. But before we talk about that, we're going to hear from our friends at JPEG Financial and Shamrock Home Inspections.
Do you have a 401k and some savings for future retirement, but don't even know if it's enough to live off of? How much is enough? How often are you thinking about it? The team at JPEG's Financial Group can help set your mind at ease. We specialize in creating strategies in the planning and managing of your financial, educational, and investment needs. We help clients pursue their investment goals with sound financial strategies. You deserve a personal, tailored plan. Lasting, meaningful, and open relationships are the foundation of our practice. You've worked hard for your money and should feel confident in your investment choices as you make decisions for your financial future. Your goals are our goals. We are dedicated to your needs and hopes for your future. Visit our website and give us a call at 860-430-5397. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. JPEG's Financial Group, LLC is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services. JPEG's Financial Group is located at 78 Eastern Boulevard, Glastonbury, Connecticut.
There's no bigger investment than home ownership. And to make sure the house is up to your standards, you need a professional to look it over. Brian Flanagan from Shamrock Home Inspections is a licensed home inspector and a member of the Connecticut Association of Home Inspectors. Brian was a contractor for over 15 years, so he knows how homes should be constructed and how mechanicals should work.
What makes me a good home inspector was the 20 years that I was a home improvement person doing all the different repairs that I have done and what other people have done wrong that I had to go out and fix. So I have a pretty quick eye on seeing what's right and what's wrong. Before you move, call Shamrock Home Inspections.
Before you make the biggest investment of your life, call Brian Flanagan from Shamrock Home Inspections at 860-268-2566 or visit shamrockhomeinspectionct.com.
All righty, so last night Joel Embiid returned for the Sixers. I mean, this is a big lift for the Sixers, who are trying to who are in the playoffs, but they're trying to get out of the play-in tournament. And the big question is now for the Sixers. They're now two games behind the Pacers. Are they going to get to that sixth spot? Are the Sixers going to get to the sixth spot? Now, their schedule is very – the thing about it is their schedule is very, very favorable for them at the end of the year. I mean, you look at their schedule, they got if you look at their schedule, they got, you know, at Miami, at Memphis, San Antonio, Detroit, Orlando, the Nets. So in their last six games, there's a very good chance they could end up going 5-1, and they could end up getting it. I just don't know if they're going to go 5-1 down that stretch. And I just don't think they're going to catch Indiana. I think they're going to wind up, you know, get it. I think they're going to wind up having to play in the play-in tournament. They're definitely going to wind up having to play in the play-in tournament. Their schedule's favorable. I just don't think they're going to catch Indiana.
Yeah, I'm with you. More than likely, they're going to probably be in the playing spot. They got to, you know, they got to beat Miami on Thursday to really try to even get out of the spot. Because, if they can do that, then maybe, you know, because, yeah, you mentioned that schedule. It's got to be, like, the easiest schedule left with some of those, you know, Grizzly Spurs. I know the Spurs are starting to play better. You know, they've played better down the stretch here, but the Pistons are so bad. The Grizzlies, you know, Magic are, you know, good, but the Nets have really struggled. So, yeah, I think it's going to be too tough of a task with so few games left, but I wouldn't be shocked with how soft that schedule is at the end of the year. They find a way, but if they can't beat Miami on Thursday night, I think you could kind of wish any chance of that happening goodbye. So,
yeah, definitely, because they're trailing Miami right now. They're trailing. That's why, yeah, this is a big game with Miami, because they're Miami right now is the seventh seed, and if they lose that game, they're 2.5 games behind Miami. So yeah, they have to beat Miami. That's the big key for them, is they got to beat Miami, or they really don't have a chance to get to the top six. But also the bigger question is this team a title contender? And I'm gonna say at this point, I'm gonna say no, because I think it's gonna take time for Embiid to become Embiid. And if they get into the playoffs, they're probably gonna be facing the Bucks or the Celtics. And the only chance they'd have is somehow the Cavs get the 2 seed and they get the 7 seed. To me, that's the only chance they have to even win a playoff series. So I like Nick Nurse. I think Nick Nurse has done a good job with having Embiid out. I think he's done a good job this year. But I don't see the Sixers being making a run this year. I think they lose in the first round either the Celtics or the Bucks.
Yeah, I'm with you. More than likely, I see them going down to one of those two teams. They get out of the play-in round. Yeah, because I think, you know, Embiid's condition, he's going to take a bit to get back. As well here, and I just, you know, Nick Nurse is, yeah, he's won a title. He's not, you know, he's not a bad coach, but I think all the time he's missed, I think it's going to take some time for that team to kind of get back and gel together. And I just, you know, think it's be enough. And it, yeah, if you get the 8 seed, you know, the Celtics right now, they've been so good at home. I just think it'd be too tall of a task to beat those guys. You know, maybe Milwaukee you could beat just because of how bad they are defensively, but that's still, you know, be a tall task. So yeah, I don't see the Sixers being a title contender this year.
Yeah, I think with Embiid out, and let's be honest, with Embiid even healthy, I know he's been banged up at times in the playoffs, but even with Embiid, they haven't even gotten to the past the conference finals. So I just don't think this is the year for the Sixers. I don't see it. I don't see them making really a deep run. I think they'll obviously, you know, I think they get past the play-in tournament. I think they beat, you know, because yeah, they get the 8 seed. I think I think even if they have to play like a game against, you know, Chicago or Atlanta to get the number 8 seed, I think they beat one of those two teams, but I just don't see it. I don't see it from the Sixers this year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point they haven't gotten there when it beats healthy in the playoffs. And yeah, like, I don't think they've really over that hump. You know, they had the Celtics all down. They were up on the Celtics last year, up 3-2.
3-2. And he did not step up when he needed to step up. And a player who I think is better than him, Jason Tatum, he stepped up and dropped 51 in game 7.
Yeah, he did. So I think that's kind of been the Sixers. So the Sixers had a chance there. They couldn't get it done. So, yeah, you know, they've got some good pieces around them. But, yeah, I don't think this is the year. They haven't shown it in the past. So I don't see it happening this year unless some miracle happens for them. So, look, you know, if they could have stayed out of the play-in, got like a 6, you know, avoided the Bucks or Celtics in the first round, yeah, you know, see what happens. But yeah, they're not gonna be able to do that. So I just think it's be too hard this year to beat one of those two teams in the first round.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. So we are going to wrap up talking about the Yankees, and they're off to a great start. They're off to a 5-1 start, and how about Juan Soto? How amazing was he in that Houston series? Game one, he throws the guy out of the plate to win the game. Game two, he has a three-hit game. Game three, he hits the home run to put the Yankees up 4-3. And then he hits the single to put the Yankees up in the fourth game. He was so huge for the Yankees in that first series. What a pickup. What a trade this has been so far. It is really – I know they had to get rid of some pitching, but this move has really paid dividends for the Yankees.
Yeah, it has so far. You know, I don't know what it is this year. If it's because I know Judge, too, went out, you know, in the offseason said, you know, we need to change some things on the analytical side, but like the at-bats are better. And I don't know if that's just rubbing off because of Juan Soto and like the at-bats that he has, but the at-bats have been a lot better this year. It's been a much more fun team to watch than it has been the last couple of years. So maybe some of that, but yeah, Juan Soto has been a great addition so far. Yeah. You know, yeah. Like everybody was knocking the outfield. I know he's still not a great outfielder, but yeah, he makes a play opening day. You mentioned kind of getting the big out of home there to kind of seal it. So yeah, he's been great in that lineup, and Judge and Rizzo both behind him haven't even gotten going yet. So, you know, when those two get it going, it's gonna make that lineup even better. So, yeah, he's been fun to watch. It's been a fun team to watch so far. So, you know, one of the best players in baseball. He's been a great acquisition so far.
Yeah, it's been just a great start. Volpe's been hitting the ball well. Judge, this team's been hitting. I mean, the sweep in Houston was great. The pitching. The only issue, I mean, and we know it's an Achilles heel is the starting pitching. Nestor struggled so far. But, you know, the bullpen's been really good. The hitting's been really good. 5-1 to start the season. I only lost last night. But, Zach, we knew against Zach. I knew we were bound to lose a game. But 5-1 right now, I feel like there's something different with this team, especially with Juan Soto. I think there's something different. There's a different feel about this team than there was last year. And I really, really like the way this team has started.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, the pitching, yeah, besides Nestor struggled. Clay Holmes has been a little shaky. He's gotten, you know, he's gotten some help from his fielders in two of his closing appearances this year. But, you know, that's kind of the only major concerns I have with the staff so far. But, yeah, you know, you're bound to losing Zach Allen, who's one of the best starters in the league right now. But yeah, it does feel a lot different than last year. Cause last year you just kind of knew going in that there wasn't a lot of hope because it was kind of just the team rerunning from the second half of the year after they got off to such hot start in 2022. So yeah, you didn't really, have a great feeling. And, you know, right now too, with the schedule, we kind of said last week, they just had to stay afloat in the month of April. And now you got Toronto's coming up, who's kind of got off the rough start. Miami, they can't score any runs. So, you know, to start your homestand coming up. So, you know, and then Cleveland has looked better. But, you know, they played the A's, which, you know, those help your record. But, yeah, so right now for the Yankees, it does kind of look good. And you got to keep pace with Baltimore. And I know they've last couple of days, they've, you know, the offense gone a little bit of slump early on here. But it definitely seems – yeah, you know, it definitely does seem like more hope than last year.
Absolutely, there definitely is, and yeah, you think about it. You know, if we saw starting at Houston at Arizona, you're thinking this team, if they even start 3-4, we'll take it. They're now five. Yeah. The worst they're going to do is 5-2. So off to a really, really good start. And then you get to this. We'll talk about a little bit of this series this week against Toronto. You got opening day. You got Stroman against Kalik. You got Stroman on the mound on opening day. Saturday got Schmidt against Gossman, and then Sunday Heel against Francis. I think they're taking 2 out of 3. I think they definitely take 2 out of 3 in this series against the Blue Jays this weekend in Yankee Stadium, and they keep the momentum going.
Yeah, they should take 2 out of 3. Luis Heel looked really good his first kind of start back coming off Tommy John. He looked good. Gossman's going to be a tough one to beat there on Saturday, but you know, Schmidt, you know, was okay there in his first go around, and Stroman looked really good as well. So, yeah, I expect them to take 2 out of 3 right now against a Toronto team that's kind of the lineup hasn't really gotten going yet for him so far. So, I do expect them to take 2 out of the first 3 at home this week against Toronto.
Yeah, I think they definitely do. Opening day at Yankee Stadium on Friday. But that's going to wrap it up this week on Sports Talk with RJ for Justin D'Onofrio. I'm Steve Risser. We will be back next week recapping the national championship game, talking more Yankees, and giving you any NBA or NFL news that any NBA or NFL news that comes our way. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Hello, my name is Joe Aguirre. I'm the president of Clovercrest Media Group. And here at CMG, we have a wide variety of podcasts, including sports shows like Keys to the City, The Roll Call, Throwing Jabs, All Four Downs, and Jawing About the G-Men. And great true crime shows like Sticky Meat, Crimes and Consequences, Ivy League Murders, and Bird, the unsolved murder of David Eichmann. You can find all these podcasts and so much more by visiting clovercrestmedia.com.